nobody feeling no pain.
All right. Yeah. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, Triple Play Thursday. That means you can call in and text 312-981-7200 your request for Triple Play Thursday, meaning pick an artist, three songs, and those three songs will be part of our bumps coming back from commercials. Kathy requested some Waylon Jennings, and that's the first artist up on our Triple Play Thursday. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Is the best way to stay connected. And right now, I'd like to welcome back to the show, live in studio, my friend Dmitry Samarov. Hi, Dmitry.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
Not bad.
All right. Interesting background that Dmitry has. We've talked about it many times. You and your parents moved here from the USSR.
Yep, we moved when I was seven.
And you were seven in the 80s.
70s.
70s. Oh, 70s. What's wrong with me? Yeah, in the 70s.
Thanks for that.
So in the 70s, you moved here and ended up in Boston.
Yes.
And then as you got older, you went to art school, and then you you also drove a cab, and you wrote two books about your experience driving cabs.
Mm-hmm. That's all true.
Yeah. And and so now you've become like a columnist and a reviewer and a writer, which is something that you would never thought would happen?
No. No, I'm just attempting to stitch together some sort of living without having an actual job.
Right. That's everybody's dream.
Yeah, I'm also a doorman a couple of nights a week at a at a bar. So.
And you just came from that?
Yeah, I just came from work.
And but you're writing, you know, reviews and columns and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you having a good time doing that?
It's not bad. Mm-hmm. It's not bad. It's interesting.
Okay. Yeah. As far as, like, the cab driving experience, is there more material there, do you think? Because you've already done two books. Are you done with it?
The only way there will be more is if this this filmmaker named John McNaughton's been trying to turn...
Yeah. People who listen to my show know who John McNaughton is.
Right. So he's been trying to turn it into a TV show for quite a while now. Yeah. And if that happens, then there will be more probably elaborating on some of this stuff. Mm. The TV show would be a very heavily fictionalized version of some of my experiences, mm-hmm. kind of what we've woven together with some of his ideas.
Some of John's ideas.
Yeah.
John, by the way, director of Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer.
So that's the only way I see that where there would be more material. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, periodically I've gotten, you know, asked to write stuff about Uber or whatever else is going on, you mm-hmm. know, in the cab industry, but it's less and less so now.
Well, you, when you, towards the tail end of you driving, you actually did do a little Uber work, didn't you?
Yeah. They recruited some cab drivers. I was one of the first ones. I used their app for maybe 2-3 months or something mm-hmm. before I quit in 2012.
I've never used Uber. Mm-hmm. I tried to use it one time. And I was confused. I have the app on my phone. It mm-hmm. came with my phone.
Yeah.
So I have the app on my phone, and I was trying to get that. This is very, very specific. It was a Friday, and I was going from one movie to another. Mm-hmm. And I had just seen The Green Inferno, Eli Roth's fantastic cannibal movie. And I was at that stupid theater on Western by the Kennedy, the City North.
Oh, yeah.
All right. And I couldn't get a cab. It was a Friday evening. I couldn't get a cab. And I was heading to the Music Box to see Goodnight Mommy. Mm. So I was doing like a horror double feature thing, and I had already
out of character for you.
No, exactly. Have you seen Goodnight Mommy?
No, I haven't. I missed that one.
Yeah. You'd hate the Eli Roth movie, but Goodnight Mommy's great.
No. You say Eli Roth, and yeah. you've guaranteed that I'm not going to see it.
No, so. I don't blame you. I actually liked Green Inferno, but this Goodnight Mommy's great. But anyway, I digress. So I'm waiting for a cab. I can't find a cab. Yeah. So I go to the Uber thing. I couldn't figure out where the cab was. The car.
Yeah.
I had my location, and I was like trying. And then I tried to walk towards where one was, and I just was like, I can't.
Well, you better get with it, because that's the way cabs are. That is cabs now,
yeah.
basically. It's just a matter of time. But
yeah.
I like out of the bar, I see, you know, one after the other. I see them all with the phones, and they're tracking where the car is.
Yeah.
And then they run out, and there's the car.
Yeah.
It's the way it is now.
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out. And I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that it was Friday at like 5:30.
Probably.
You know, or 6 p.m.
Yeah, with their great, like, price gouging policies, you probably would have paid like seven times what.
That's another thing, and there was, and it kept popping up on the screen. It's like, oh, you're in prime territory, and it's going to be this much. And I was like,
price gouging out.
I was like, I just got to get to the, and I ended up not making it to the theater, so I had to go the next night to see it.
So. That's a heartbreaking story.
Yeah, it is heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking.
But it's just me.
Rideshare nightmare.
I bring it up because I'm still not Ubered, as you know, you drove me around a lot.
Sure.
I don't have a car, and if I'm not taking public transportation, I'll just hail a cab.
Well, I'll tell you my story with that. Now that I work at this bar, every once in a while, I live very close to the bar, but sometimes if the weather's lousy or I'm just really tired, I'll take a cab.
Yeah.
And I can only take cabs because I no longer have a smartphone.
That's right.
And you can't use Uber or Lyft without a smartphone.
That's right.
So I actually call a taxi.
Right. Now, we told the story about how you gave up all social media.
Right.
Like, all together. You like cold turkey. It was a great story, an interesting story, really nicely written.
Thanks.
As well. But you, I love the detail that you actually went into a phone store and said, I'd like to trade this in, give me a flip phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they lost their minds. Yeah, soon after that, I upgraded. I went on eBay and bought a phone with a full keyboard so I could text.
As opposed to typing it three times to get the letter.
That was just too, I wasn't going to go back to like cuneiform, I wasn't going to go back that far in communication technology.
Right.
But I'm pretty close.
Yeah.
Every time I take the phone out, people start laughing.
Do you have it?
Yeah.
Because I had a flip phone with the full keyboard until September. That's my phone.
Yeah.
That's exactly.
I found it on eBay for like $20.
That's exactly, because you can open it up.
Yeah.
That is the phone I had from 2000.
It looks like a PS, like it's like looks like a video game.
It does.
Like an old school video game.
It does.
Handheld.
I've had that. Oh, Dimitri, you're bringing back memories.
Yeah.
I had that phone from 2009.
Nostalgic moment on the
2000. Exactly. 2009 to September of last year.
Right. I was trying to figure out how old this is. Yeah, it's close to 10 years old.
Yeah.
This phone.
Because my ex, I had a little teeny flip phone for because I didn't get a phone until 2007.
Yeah.
That was my first phone ever.
I remember that whole saga. I was driving you around when that was happening.
Right.
It was an exciting multi-week process.
Exactly. That's right. So it was because Heather didn't have a landline, and I was moving in with her at the time. And so, like, I got this phone, and I never wanted to update it. And then for Christmas 2009, 2 years later, she gets me that damn phone that you have.
Yeah.
And I had that phone until it broke down. I couldn't, I had it for, I had it for 6 years. Over 6 years I had that phone.
It's really nice. I have to charge it maybe like twice a week.
That's the other thing, man. Like, I've noticed now I've got one of these crazy
things. Yeah.
And I got to charge it all the time.
Of course you do. Well, because it's connected all the time. Yeah, it's sucking battery. Not mine.
Yeah, I know. And, I know. I had that phone for a long time.
$34 a month.
That's great. And that's a good phone. I got to say, I got a lot of life out of that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm perfectly happy with it, but it does not have Uber built in.
Right,
to
so
it.
You can't get...
No, I have to call a taxi. The very rare times that I need one, that's what happens.
Yeah. Okay, and so you're fine without with the social media. It's actually it made things better for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of cleared my mind. It means that I don't have this constant distraction in my pocket all the time, and unfortunately I wasn't one of those people that could... regulate myself and have the self-control not to look at the thing every 2 seconds.
Right.
And now there's nothing to look at.
I mean,
maybe a couple of times a day somebody texts me or I text them.
Mm-hmm.
Hardly ever talk on the phone either.
Right.
But I'm not living in a cabin in the woods or anything. I'm online every day. I have to be.
Right.
For work stuff.
Right.
And it seems to be enough. It seems to be working.
Yeah.
So far.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right, hang on, Dimitri. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the stuff that you've written, a couple of book reviews for the Tribune and some reader columns, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Dimitri Samarov is here, artist and writer, an all-around good guy. DimitriSamarov.com is his website. We have a link on our Facebook page. You can check it out right now, Facebook.com/NickDShow. Facebook.com/NickDShow. Don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys. Don't let them pick guitars and drive them old trucks. Let them be doctors and lawyers and such. Good morning, everybody. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. And it's Triple Play Thursday, man. Triple Play Thursday. If you want your Triple Play requests, pick an artist, three songs. They will be part of our show. 312-981-7200. Kathy, again, requested some Waylon Jennings. And don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys. All right. That's the story of my life, Dimitri, as you know. Always wanted to be a cowboy.
So, breaking news.
Yeah, it is. Dimitri Samarov is here, and let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you've written. You're writing now book reviews for the Tribune.
Yeah.
Are you enjoying that?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. I mean, it depends on the book.
Clearly.
Book to book, and they're all different books.
Well, this book that you talk about, this memoir about a guy who tracked down a bully.
Bullies, yeah, Alex Abramovich.
It starts out, I read your review, and it starts out, I guess the book starts out as a guy who wanted to track down the bully who used to pick on him and beat him up, but then it becomes much more than that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it turns out that so they went to school together somewhere, in Long Island, and the writer, he ends up becoming a journalist in New York. But the bully moves, he ends up in Oakland, and he starts a motorcycle club called the East Bay Rats. Mm-hmm. And this guy, Alex, tracks him down and starts hanging out with him and sort of reminiscing and, like, going back over. And this guy's version of their childhood is very different than the author's. And he just starts questioning how he remembers everything. And then they start really just palling around. The writer ends up moving to Oakland and just becoming, like, almost like a... Almost not a member of this motorcycle club, but he's there all the time. He's like an embedded reporter, sort of observes this weird subculture of these guys that have their own club, their own family, kind of, and little army against the world. Yeah.
And then, but it even goes beyond that because it becomes about Occupy Oakland.
The time that he's writing about coincides with the Occupy movement in Oakland. That part got really ugly. If anybody remembers the news reports from there, so this motorcycle club guy goes there because he's just fascinated by it, and they both are sort of part of it, and he's like kind of looking for recruits for his club, which after a while people are getting older and they're just drifting apart, and his club is kind of slowly dying and he needs new blood, so he goes there and sort of looking for new rabble rousers. Mm-hmm. and the writer is just documenting all this stuff going on.
And again, the author and the title,
The title of the book is Bullies, and the author is Alex Abramovich.
Abramovich.
Yeah.
And so did you like the book?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a really quick read. It was a really entertaining book. I mean, the one strange thing, and I didn't include this in the review, but I thought about it afterwards, is that it's sort of billed as a memoir, but we don't really find out very much about the author at all. He's more just a reporter reporting on this motorcycle club and other sort of bigger events in America, like Occupy. And you just don't, he's a Russian immigrant, and he's obviously had a sort of like a troubled relationship with his own family, but there's very little detail about that in the book. Mm-hmm. Strangely enough, he's sort of just full on in reporter mode most of the way. And he's certainly a character in some of the proceedings, but, we find out a lot less about him than about, this motorcycle club in the bigger world.
Now, is that a flaw in the book, or?
You know, I can kind of go back and forth. It's well worth reading.
Yeah.
It's well worth reading. And I found out about this book actually by, he was being interviewed by Terry Gross on Fresh Air.
Mm.
And I heard, and then pitched it to the Trib, and they accepted. And that's one way that whole process works. I pick the books, either I'm kind of scanning, you know, new releases or whatever, and then if they don't have anybody assigned to it and the editor is into it, then they send me a copy, and then I write, you know, read it quick. Mm-hmm. And write about it.
Okay. And now, at the beginning of this book, was this author, was he traumatized by this guy? Did he have, like, memories of this guy being really, really evil?
Yeah,
did he need to find this guy? Was it something that... Yeah, he needed closure?
Yeah, I think at the beginning he started thinking that he would, like, settle a score, figure out, like, why did you pick on me all this time? But the more time he spent with him, the more he realized that, like, the biker claimed that this guy, the author, like, fought with him as much, like, that he gave as much as he got.
Right.
So it's never really quite clear what actually happened, you know?
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's not as obvious as, you know, the book takes you on a journey, which a book should do.
Yeah. Okay. And it's called Bullies of Friendship.
Yeah.
And it's out right. It's out right now. When did this review run recently? Or
they just posted it.
Oh.
So yeah. I mean, with the way that things are published now, it's very hard to say. It's sort of nebulous. So it's online now on the Tribune site.
Right.
You can see, and then on this, it'll be in the Sunday's Printer's Row Journal, which is just digital, but it's a separate sort of entity
right
within the Tribune. And but yeah,
okay. And the book is called Bullies of Friendship, and you can actually read Dimitri's review at Chicago, then,
yeah,
ChicagoTribune.com. Like,
occasionally they make these reviews make it into print versions of the paper, but I never know when that is
right
at this point.
Yeah, it's interesting what's gone on in publishing now.
It's chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, does that affect when your deadline is, or you know, like when you have to write a piece and get it to the editor?
Sometimes. I think with the Printer's Row Journal, I think they have X amount of space that they like to allocate mm-hmm. per issue. And then so they have a schedule that way. With the Reader, it's a different issue, because some stuff is especially for online and some stuff is for print specifically and will also be online. So they're different deadlines
right.
for those. Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. Dimitri is here. We got more to talk about. DimitriSamarov.com is the website. And like I said, we have a link on our Facebook page at Facebook.com/NickDShow. We got lots more to talk about, I'm interested, and I read your piece, but I think a lot of people will be interested on your take on the show The Americans, simply because of your personal background.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll talk about that, which is a show that I actually really love. I think it's
an interesting show.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that in a second, because your perspective is going to be a lot different than most people's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we'll talk more right after we break for the news, which is coming up next.
Be tall, you never saw a man in trouble with the law since the day they were born.
Yeah. So Kathy requested Waylon Jennings. Specifically, the Dukes of Hazzard theme. Now, you know, Waylon Jennings was like the narrator of every episode of the Dukes of Hazzard. He was like, "Oh, them Duke boys, what are they up to now?" All right, Kathy.
Wasn't that based on his life story?
Was it?
No.
I don't know.
I'm making that up.
The Dukes of Hazzard, Waylon Jennings, Kathy requested that for
casting aspersions against the dearly departed.
Yeah.
Recently.
So Kathy is requested for Triple Play Thursday, and that's what we got. 3:30 here on 720 WGN. And we're talking with Dimitri Samarov, artist, writer, good guy, doorman, mm-hmm. and all those things. And we're talking about some of the things that he's written, some book reviews and some columns for The Reader. And now, this TV show, The Americans, which is on FX,
mm-hmm.
Which, of course, everybody knows stars my future ex-wife, Carrie Russell.
Right, Felicity.
From Felicity, that's right. And she's in it, but it's not just her. Oh, wait a minute.
Hi, I'm Carrie Russell, and I love Nick's radio show.
I know you do, baby. So that's The Americans. Now,
yes.
We mentioned briefly your background.
Yeah.
And so
I'm from the Evil Empire.
You are from the Evil Empire. You're from the Evil Empire.
The place that this couple in this show is charged with spying for.
Right. Now, tell everybody, for people who might not know, it's entering its fourth season. It just started its fourth season.
Right. So it's set in the 80s during the Reagan era, sort of in the winding down of the Soviet Union, like the tail end of the Soviet Empire, basically. And it's about a couple that's posing as an American couple with two kids in America, but they're actually Soviet spies trained in the Soviet Union. And they're smuggling various secrets, like you know, military secrets and other shady things for the motherland.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the basic plot.
Yeah,
and it gets into a lot more. It's it. I mean, it's ultimately there's a lot more going on than just that.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's got to have a different. It's got to be a pretty interesting perspective for you from you to watch this.
Yeah,
to watch
it would
this
be
show.
Like, you know, if somebody made like a sitcom about, you know, your family, but it was like in Japanese.
Right.
That's what it's like watching the parts that are in Russian for me.
Mm.
And I mean, they're actually really good. The show's really good about the accents and stuff, which oftentimes movies and TV shows aren't with Russian. You know, I happen to know the language, so I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
There are some native Russian speakers, and the ones that aren't, they get the accent pretty well. But the formation of the phrases and the actual dialogue was quite obviously translated from English, because just the rhythms and the expressions that they use are not Russian ones that Russians would never use. So that part's sort of weird and kind of cringe-inducing for me personally.
Yeah.
But I'm still sort of fascinated by the show. And I think the setup and what it is about these spies is just sort of where it takes place. I think it's basically just a family drama.
That's
really the most. It's a family drama set in an unusual locale with, you know, parents that have very strange, stressful jobs. But they could have done the show set in a totally different place where they're not spies, and it could be just as compelling in a certain way.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what it comes down to. I mean, ultimately, it is like a family drama. That's what it comes down
like
to. And that's what it's evolved into.
Yeah, the husband has to carry on affairs with other women to cultivate them for information. But you could see that would be the same way as a guy stepping out on his wife and having an affair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the greater good or whatever.
Yeah.
It's there's a lot of good stuff in it, but the stuff with the specifically Russian settings and like the scenes in Russia or like in the Russian embassy are sort of silly.
Okay.
Not quite Boris and Natasha silly, but silly.
Right. Yeah. Now, have there ever been any films or TV shows in your experience that kind of capture Russia or kind of capture the experience of being Russian in America closely to what you've experienced?
Russian in America? Well, that's different. I mean,
okay.
There's the immigrant stuff. It's really hard to make a movie or a book or whatever about a culture that's not your own. I mean, it's sort of a real leap of imagination in a way. And it always ends up being more about the stuff that you know. So the background of the guy that made The Americans is, I think he was involved with the CIA in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So that part is the most sort of seems the most true to life, you know, and that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And so it's interesting though. But when you see, like American actors speaking Russian,
mm-hmm.
Does that make you nuts?
Sometimes. It depends.
Yeah,
it depends. You know, Rocky V or Rocky IV or whatever.
Oh,
you know,
God.
Ivan Drago.
Yeah,
that's like the worst kind of example
right.
of that.
Right.
You know, you got a guy that's, was he Swedish or something? Or
Dolph
Norwegian?
Lundgren? I think he is Norwegian.
Or Norwegian or something?
Yeah.
That's supposed to pass for a Russian?
Yeah. So.
I mean, never mind that, you know, the politics of it all, but.
Yeah, which is just insane. Because, you know, Rocky can single-handedly stop the Cold War because of that.
Sure.
At the end of Rocky IV, the Cold War is over.
In that sense, actually, The Americans is interesting because we all know what will happen to these. That you know that in a few years, the jig will be up,
right?
For these characters that we've come to like, over years. But you know they're not. They'll be out of a job at the very least in a couple of years.
Unless unless they pull a MASH and the show lasts longer than the Korean War actually did. This show's got a limited life, you know, a limited shelf life.
True. Yeah. So there's this kind of sword of Damocles hanging over them the whole time. You know that they're dead in a couple of years,
exactly.
One way or the other, which I think adds kind of gravity to the whole thing in a way. Yeah.
Check this out. 773 area code sends in a text. It said, Nick, a couple of weeks ago, you did a segment about how your job has been represented on the screen. And it kind of ties in with how Dimitri feels about the Americans. And then, but then they says, what do you think about taxi drivers in TVs and movies? And I actually mentioned you.
Oh, yeah.
When we talked about this topic a couple of weeks ago, and I mentioned that you thought that the show Taxi was pretty accurate, especially for that time period.
In a certain way.
In a certain way. Like the waiting part. And
yeah, just the part in the garage, the hanging out kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all a lot funnier, I guess, than actual cab drivers.
Right.
Because they have you know, comic writers writing their best lines.
Not everything comes out.
And nobody I ever met was as good looking as Mary Lou Henner.
Right. Right. And not everybody has a zinger that, you know, like, boom.
No, no. And, yeah, there's, you know, but... more of them were like the Christopher Lloyd character than anybody else. <You know?
laughs> Which, by the way, that show still holds up. I think that show is still funny. It's a pretty good show.
Yeah. It's a pretty good show.
It's pretty strong, man. Some of those shows that were considered great back in the 70s and the 80s are either really bad or terribly dated.
I'll tell you, though. I mean, like when I started driving a cab, you know, college students still remembered this show Taxi. So they would ask me sometimes if my job was like the show Taxi, and my standard line was always, no, it's more like the movie Taxi Driver.
Right. Now see,
and that would shut them up, usually. Then they would be scared.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing that we've mentioned this before when we've had conversations. You wanted to be a taxi driver because of the movie Taxi Driver.
In a certain way.
In a certain way.
Yeah. Not in the scary.
Not in the, you're going to kill people and...
No, more in learning the finding out about the city and the I'll go anywhere, anytime kind of mantra.
Right. And what are some other ones that now? What about Chicago Cab, which was based on the play Hell Cab? Did you ever see Hell Cab on stage?
Yeah, okay. Like a later production.
Yeah,
that was fun.
Yeah,
it was fun. Chicago Cab's more interesting, actually, just to see as a kind of a time capsule from another time. Like, you watch it now. To see all the things that are gone from the city of Chicago that are no longer there in the backgrounds of that movie.
Yeah.
And all the cameos, like Michael Shannon's in there, the crazy druggie.
Right.
There's all these great cameos in it. I don't know if it quite translates as a movie exactly. It's a play. I mean.
Yeah. And it was different. I mean, the play was quite different than Chicago Cab. And I don't like the movie very much, but I thought I saw the play a bunch of times. I had friends who were in it. Thing ran for
Wasn't
like,
there some joke that every Chicago actor was in Hellcab.
Was in Hellcab. And at some point, but I preferred that, over the movie. Was there another one? Oh, well, yeah, there was that stupid TV show that unfortunately your book shares the name with.
Oh, Hack.
Hack.
Yes.
Yeah, with David Morse.
David Morse is a disgraced cop who becomes a Samaritan in the guise of a cab driver.
Now, wasn't there...
He runs around and helps people.
Dan, wasn't there that other one that we were talking about? What was the name of that show when the people got mad?
Oh, the Brooklyn Cab?
Brooklyn Taxi.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I made it through about 15 minutes of an episode of that one.
Dan, we were making fun of it one morning or something, and then you ended up pissing off a bunch of fans of that show.
Yeah,
that was Undercover Cops, too, right?
Taxi Brooklyn.
Taxi Brooklyn.
That's like Pretty People, like undercover or something in a taxi,
right?
Isn't it?
The one cop got, you know, busted, and so she couldn't drive her police car anymore.
So she drove around with a taxi guy.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But we were like mocking it.
We were just like, well, have you heard about this POS? And then all of a sudden, like, somebody's like, don't talk bad about Taxi Brooklyn.
We had the fan club of that show listening that morning. So, all right. We got a break, and we'll come back. More with Dmitri Samarov, DmitriSamarov.com. We'll talk more about some of the stuff that he's written for The Reader, and you got some book reviews for the Chicago Tribune as well. Yeah, man. Yeah. Triple Play Thursday, man. I approve. Mike requested some Robin Trower, man. Robin Trower, that was fine day. Triple Play Thursday, man. Robin Trower. So we'll hear a couple more Robin Trower songs. Do you remember Robin Trower, Dimitri?
No, I do not.
a popular guitarist from the 70s.
Before my time.
Yeah. I saw him in concert probably four or five times. My favorite was in the old amphitheater. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun seeing him. Dmitri Samarov is here. Now, I, you know, you and I talk a lot about, and we always over the years have talked about movies and argued over movies.
Sure.
Over the, in fact, off the air, you walked out of the Richard Linklater movie, and I've seen it twice.
Sure.
And I loved it. So this is not uncommon between the two of us.
Yeah.
Except that we both agree that The Witch is great.
The Witch is fantastic.
Yes. It's, yeah. It's a great film.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that we've also have in common is is a fascination and a love for pretty much all things Werner Herzog.
Yeah,
And we've over the years we've talked about some of the work that he's done that has been just amazing, and he's completely out of his mind in a great way, and makes great movies. Now, this thing that you've watched is called Lo and Behold.
Lo and Behold,
yeah. Tell me about Lo and Behold, how people can see it, and what it's all about. You did a review of it.
You know, I don't know how people can see it. I'm sure they'll release it somehow, some way. It's a documentary. About basically everything with I think the subtitle is Reveries in the Connected World or something like that. But it's how technology has totally changed everything in our lives. It's kind of related to that thing I wrote about switching off social media.
Yeah.
It's that same thing in how reliant we've become on this, the internet, but more than the internet, all these devices and how they're all hooked together into these systems. So he interviews people that are completely traumatized, but like he goes and interviews these kids that were so addicted to online gaming, you know, like video game, like and cosplay and all this stuff that they had to go to this like mountain retreat to recover. He quotes this horrible story from, I think, Korea, where this kid played for so long that he had thrombosis in his leg, had his leg amputated, basically, because he wouldn't get up from the video game.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. Or people that would get really sensitive to any kind of radiation, like from cell phones or anything.
Yeah.
Well, kind of like in that movie Safe, the Todd Haynes movie,
which
Safe,
is a great film,
where the woman becomes allergic to modern life, basically,
right? Which is a phenomenal movie if you've not seen.
So he's got people like that, but then he's got people like Elon Musk, who's building rockets to colonize Mars, you know, and who's just giddy about technology and thinks it's going to save the world. But it's Werner Herzog, and he's narrating it, so it's got that special kind of edge to it.
Is it? Did you see it in the theater? Was it?
I got a screener because I was writing about it for the Reader. But it played at a weekend documentary festival at the Music Box. They had a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it's got a distributor, and I'm sure it'll be shown.
Oh, well, sure. It's Werner Herzog, and it's a documentary, and he makes amazing documentaries.
Yeah, it gives you a lot of stuff to think about.
The one story that you mentioned in the piece that you wrote about it is the woman who stayed locked up and had her husband deliver.
Oh, yeah. She. This is one of the people that developed acute sensitivity to any kind of, you know, radio waves. She had herself locked in a Faraday cage, which is like a sensory deprivation chamber, basically. And her husband would pass her food into this box where she stayed for a year.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder, what does Herzog talk about where he finds these people? Is there,
They're all in retreats. You know, these are people like in these wooded areas, in places where there are no cell phones. Then they've developed various ways to block signals of almost everything.
Yeah,
and they're sort of living in this weird, utopia, I guess, or something. I mean, these are people that get together and play like banjo music and stuff. Yeah, it's it turns into sort of it's a little bit ridiculous, and it's scary to contemplate. It's like, is this how far we have to go to keep this stuff at bay? But then, you know, he's got footage from Hurricane Sandy in New York, and how just knocking out the grid for a couple of days, what chaos that plunges society into. It's sort of like a wide-ranging kind of essay or meditation on the world that we've made for ourselves.
Yeah. And through the craziness of Werner Herzog.
Yeah.
Who has, you know, has made some absolutely amazing
I mean, it's a remarkable career that he's made. He's never rested on his laurels, almost never repeated himself. He just keeps finding new stuff to do. I mean, we should all be so lucky or creative.
Yeah.
I think he's in his 70s now.
Yeah, he's got to be.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a Steve the limo driver sends in a text. Oh. He's a regular listener. Says, did Dimitri ever work O'Hare? Did he like the food in the taxi line at the Middle Diner? Diner is what it says.
At the staging area?
I guess.
There's a little restaurant in the lot where you wait. Did I like the food? Well, it was the only food there.
Yeah. And to answer the first question, you indeed did work O'Hare.
Yeah, I did a whole series of paintings in that taxi staging area, actually, that you can see on my website. Mm-hmm. I spent quite a lot of time there, but would I go out of my way to eat at that restaurant now? Probably not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you go into detail in your book, in the first book, uh-huh. about you know, like where the best, just like just the simplest things, like where the best bathroom is, or
oh sure,
you know, stuff like that. Like people don't really think about it, you know.
Yeah, when you're trapped in a car, you know, for 15, 16 hours a day, things like convenient bathrooms become sort of a premium. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so what are you working on? What are you writing about next?
I'm not sure. I've got a couple of little things, but the big thing I've got going on.
Oh, you got
now
a show. You have a show.
I've got some artwork up at this great restaurant and wine bar called Rootstock in Humboldt Park. It's at the corner of Augusta and California.
Augusta and California.
Yeah. It's going to be up for a couple of months. Mm-hmm. It's all black and white stuff. It's charcoal and ink pieces, like larger pieces. And
is there a theme? Is it connected? Or
yeah, it's all actually work. One of the owners there selected the stuff, and it's all from about 8 or 9 years ago when I lived in an apartment, kind of near Pilsen, and it's almost all interior views of this apartment.
I've seen many of those.
Pretty typical Chicago apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anybody that's lived in apartments in Chicago will recognize a lot of stuff.
I happen to live in one
and
now.
He's a less than stellar housekeeper. Have a lot to relate to.
Yeah.
And you should go there because the food's really good and they have a great wine selection.
And it's Rootstock.
Rootstock.
Rootstock, Augusta, California in Humboldt Park. And how long is it running?
I think a couple more months.
Couple of months.
Yeah.
So, okay. So in the spring, early summer, get out to Rootstock, have some wine, have some food. And check out Dimitri's artwork. And again, these pieces are available to buy, correct?
Of course, always. Yeah, and for people that can't afford actual, you know, original artwork, I sell prints. I've sort of dipped my toe into T-shirts lately.
Mm-hmm.
I have a few designs up for sale.
Okay, and that's all on your website.
Yeah, the T-shirts specifically are at Threadless. This great T-shirt company called Threadless has them. It's samarov.threadless.com.
Okay, samarov.threadless.com. And that's S-A-M-A-R-O-V.
Yep.
Samarov.
But there's links to all this stuff from my website,
okay.
For sure.
And we have a link to your website on our Facebook page.
Terrific.
Facebook.com/NickDShow. Look forward to seeing you again, Dimitri. Always fun to talk to you and always fun to catch up.
Thanks for having me,
Absolutely.
As always.
Take care. It's Dimitri Samarov, everybody. And check out his website on our Facebook page. We'll break here really quickly for the news.